This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parashas Vayeshev. So we have three ideas that I'd like to share with you. I hope we'll have time to get through the three of them. I was a bit optimistic to put more on the sheet, but let's try. For those listening online, please email me at j.golka@gmail.com and Brinet, I'll send you the handout. The parasha begins, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Mugure Aviv be'eretz Kanaan. Famously, Rashi says, Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Yaakov Avinu wanted to dwell b'shalva in tranquility. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kofatz olav rogzah shel Yosef, immediately the troubles with Yosef began. And it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzadikim evakshin leishev b'shalva, Tzadikim want to dwell in peace. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, L'dayim v'tzadikim asher mesukim lehem le'olam haba. Is it not enough what they're going to get in the world to come? They also want to dwell in peace and serenity in this world as well. Famous Rashi at the beginning of this week's parasha. Now, I came across a very interesting idea of the Rabbi Yeshua Mikotna, who known as the Yeshua's Malkai, which I saw quoted in the Sefer Kamotzi Shalom Rav. His full name is Yisrael Yeshua Trunk. And he was born in 1821. He was named after three giants, the Baal Shem Tov, Yisrael, the Vilna Gaon, and the Pnei Yeshua. And therefore, his name is Yisrael Yeshua. Yisrael is after the Baal Shem Tov. Yeshua is the Pnei Yeshua. And also the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon, how do you see the Vilna Gaon? The Vilna Gaon is Eliyahu, Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer. Where's Eliyahu? So if you write the word Yisrael Yeshua, the last two letters of the word Yisrael is Aleph Lamed. And the first three letters of Yeshua is Yud Hei Vav, which spells Eliyahu. And whenever he would sign his name, he would always write Yisrael Yeshua. So he's got all three names there, Yisrael, Yeshua, and Eliyahu. And he was known for his tremendous love for Yisrael. He visited there in 1886, which is, at that time, was an incredible accomplishment to be able to get there to Yisrael. He encouraged other people in the old year he went to. He encouraged the old Yeshuv to begin the agricultural settlement. And in the Shemitah controversy of 1889, he was one of the first rabbonim to actually approve the Hetzer Mechira. Anyway, he wrote the Tshuvas called Yeshua's Malka and other works too. And he makes the following comment, which relates to this week's parsha. You see, the Gemara in Brachas says, Brachas Samach Daladom Dalef, which is the very last daf of Meseches Brachas, Omer Rebbe Avin Halevi. Hanifdar min hames. If someone takes leave of a dead person, al yomer lo leich l'shalom. Don't say to the mace, leich l'shalom, ela leich b'shalom. You say leich b'shalom. And therefore, when you take leave of a living person, you say to him, leich l'shalom. But when you take leave of a mace, you say leich b'shalom. Why the difference? Says Rabbi Yeshua Mikotna, Yisrael Yeshua Trunk, this is what he says. The explanation that you say leich l'shalom to a living person and leich b'shalom to a dead person is this. Shachaim nisnei eya, I'm looking at the fourth box on the page. Shachaim nisnei eya mishtekek lahasik hashemus. A living person has got a job in this world to try and achieve shlemus, to overcome challenges in this world. V'lochein yesh levarcho. When you see another human being, you should bless him, sheyelech elov, that he should succeed in this mission. V'lochein omrim lo leich l'shalom, go to peace, to achieve your goal of shlemus, which is overcoming your challenges and succeeding in your journey through life. V'lum asois, in contrast to this, hameis chofshi hu min hamitzvos. A mace, once he passes away, is relieved, is free from doing mitzvos. He's not continuing to acquire perfection and completeness and shlemus. He now takes with him the shlemus that he has achieved in his lifetime. You say to the dead person, take the shalom that you've achieved in your lifetime and take it with you to the next world, to the Olam HaEmes. Yaakov Avinu Sova, next paragraph. Yaakov Avinu thought, that after he's had so many difficulties in his life, the challenges with Esau at the very beginning, the jewel he had, that he was running after him to kill him. He then runs away and he goes to Lavan's house, all the challenges in the house of Lavan, etc. Lo yinase od HaKadosh Baruch Hu od. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to challenge him more. He's had so many difficulties in his life. V'rotza leishev b'shalva im ha-shemus sherochash lo b'mechayot. He thought that that's it. Much the same as Avraham Avinu after the Akedah. We don't know of any nisyonos that he has after that. Again, according to some, it was the next, you know, after Sarah died. But the most poskim, most rishonim say that the Akedah was the last nisyon. So the last decades of Avraham's life seemingly were without major nisyonos. So Yaakov Avinu thought too. I've had major nisyonos in my life. Esav, the challenges with Shimon and Levi, with Lavan, with Rachel and Leah. I've done my lot. So I just want to live with the shleimus that I've achieved. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, I'm not quite finished yet. He has to go through the challenge of the sale of Yosef and to maintain his tzidkas, his righteousness. He still has to go l'shalom, and he hasn't yet achieved the shleimus that is required of him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's the explanation of Rashi, that Bikesh Yaakov Leishev V'Shalva. He thought that he had achieved the shleimus that he had expected of him in this world, and therefore Bikesh Yaakov Leishev V'Shalva, with the shleimus that he had accumulated, he had achieved in this world. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, we're not quite there yet. You're still in the state of Leich L'Shalei. Okay, now let's move on. I'm going to jump to the end of the parasha, the famous incident of the butler and the baker, the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim. And I'd like to share with you a remarkable insight of the Aruch HaShulchan. Take a look at paragraph 2. There is a Yerushalmi. And this, you can, by the way, you can put it away for your preparation for Pesach. I know Pesach seems a long way away. We're not yet holding my Hanukkah. But this idea is very savable at Seder night. And it relates to this week's parasha, a fascinating idea of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Yerushalmi says, why is it that we have four cups of wine on Seder night? So the Yerushalmi gives, first of all, the standard reason. Rabbi Benoah says, "Keneged arba gulos." It corresponds to the four expressions for hitzeisi, v'itzalti, v'go'alti, v'lokachti. That's the well-known reason. Then the Yerushalmi continues, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Keneged arba koses shaparo. It says it corresponds to the four times it says the word kos in the dream of the butler, the Sar HaMashkim, because it says the kos paro biyodi, for eschatosam al kos paro, for etanel ha kos al yodi, nosata kos paro biyodi. It says kos four times. Therefore, we have four koses, which begs the question: what has one got to do with the other? What has the story of the butler and the baker, the dreams of the Sar HaOfim, the Sar HaMashkim, in the end of this week's parasha, what's that got to do with the Dalet Kosos on Seder night? Now, we'll come back to that. Let's take a look at the writing of the Aruch HaShulchan, the Bichil Michal Epstein, the author of the Aruch HaShulchan. He wrote a little kuntros called Leil Shimurim, which is on the Haggadah of Pesach, and he has an amazing take on the story of the Sar HaOfim, the Sar HaMashkim in this week's parasha, and he asks four questions on the whole story. Let's go through it. The Atza Nevaya, it's the bottom box on page 1. The Atza Nevaya in Sar HaMashkim. Let's now explain the whole story of the Sar HaMashkim, the butler. The Lechora HaMishpat Sheshofat Paro, because seemingly the rule, the judgment of Paro, Lehoshiv Sar HaMashkim al Mechono, to reinstall the butler to his position, the Sar HaOfim Tolo, and yet he hung the Sar HaOfim, the baker, Mishpat Hepuch, if you mash a Pirush Rashi. It seems the wrong way around, according to what Rashi explains. Because Rashi explains, Shechet Sar HaMashkim Hoya Shenimsa Zuv Bekois HaMelech. What was the sin? What was the crime of the Sar HaMashkim, of the butler? A fly was found in the glass of wine of the king. Vechet Sar HaOfim Hoya Shenimsa Kisim Ba'apas. And in contrast, the sin of the Sar HaOfim, the baker, was a bit of stone or straw or something was found in the bread of the king. But Lefizeh, seemingly, Chet Sar HaMashkim Harbe Gadol Moed. The sin of the Sar HaMashkim is much more serious, is much graver. Shahari esakos noisin le'al kaf paro, because he presented a glass of wine to Paro with a fly in it, and therefore it's much more offensive. It's so directly in your face. So it's a big affront to the king. We don't give bread to the hand of the king. The bread is put in a basket in front of the king with lots of other loaves. So the baker's crime wasn't as serious. It wasn't as offensive. So how come the butler, whose crime is much more grave, he was reinstated, and yet the baker, whose crime was seemingly more trivial, was much less, yet he was condemned to death? That's the first question. The eight, next question. Have you ever thought about this? How strange that the butler and the baker, both of their crimes happened at the same time. It was seemingly a big coincidence. Haledovahu. V'oi, the third question. V'iko ha'inyan, ma'achor ha'af ha'godl hazeh. Why did Paro get so angry? V'dai hoya la'paro la'adicha mi'mashmerusam. He should have just asked them to resign. He should have just fired them. Al ho'ed der zirusam, on the lack of cautiousness, on the lack of doing their job, the lack of care of doing their job. Ach lo'shivam b'masor, but to throw them into prison, the lishpat mishpat moves, and to issue a death sentence al oven kal kazeh on a seemingly trivial crime, einu mederech hamusa, it seems to be illogical, strange. Fourth question: va'id mash amra teira chetu mashke malach mitzrayim va'ifel adonai melach mitzrayim einu muvan. Why use the loshen chet? Likre ha'ed zehirus b'shem chet. It was a lack of, vigilance. That's what it was. A lack of care, a lack of attention. It wasn't a crime. It wasn't a chet, a sin. Why call it a sin? So the Aruch HaShulchan has got four questions on the story of the butler and the baker in this week's parsha. Number one, the butler was reinstated and the baker was condemned to death. Surely the butler's crime was much worse. It was more offensive. So why did he get off? And the baker, whose crime was more trivial, he was condemned to death. The second of all, isn't it a coincidence that both of these incidents happen at exactly the same time? They're both thrown into jail. Third of all, it seems like a very strict judgment. You throw them into jail and you kill one of them for a seemingly minor offense. And third of all, why is it called a chet? Sorry, fourth of all, why is it called a chet? It was a lack of vigilance, that's all. It wasn't a sin. So that's what sort of makes the Aruch HaShulchan very curious. So therefore, he comes up with quite a wild pshat. Let's go through it. Top of the next page. V'lochein, Libi Oymen, my heart tells me, to ha'inyan kach hoya, this is what happened. Sheshnei hasorim ho'ele ho'yusoymim zelazer. The butler and the baker hated each other. V'kol echod rotzu l'hachshles hasheni. Each one tried to get the other into trouble. L'ban yivash ve'inei paroi, so that they would be embarrassed and they would get into trouble in the eyes of Paro. That they would lose their job. So the Sar HaMashkin thought to himself, how am I going to get my enemy, the baker, into trouble? I've got a good idea. I'll take a piece of straw, I'll take a stone or something, a kiseh, and I'll slip it into the dough in the king's bakery. To get the Sar HaOifim into trouble. Conversely, the baker, he took a fly, and he smuggled it in into the glass of Paro, to get the Sar HaMashkin, the butler, into trouble. Therefore, what was the sin? Shekol echod mehem heyez linkoim b'hasheni. Each one was brazen to try and get the other into trouble. B'dvorim hashayachim lamelech, is an affront against the king. Now I understand. The chet of the Sar HaOifim, the baker, is much more serious because he was audacious enough to take a fly and put it into the king's cup. He is ponov lahatzel zvuv v'koyis hanitin el yad hamelech. But a fichach don dinner lemisa. That's why he got such a serious punishment. Mashenkein tzah hamashkin But in contrast, the Tzar HaMashkim, Shehitl Kisim Teicha Pas, who put a stone or a straw or something into the king's dough, into his bread, Ve'ena Pas Nitin Al Yad HaMelech, it was a lower crime, because it wasn't given to the hand of the king, it was merely put on the table in front of him, and they were one of many loaves. Maybe the king wouldn't even taken this particular loaf of bread. And therefore he reinstated him. So you see, the Aruch HaShulchan comes up with a fabulous novel interpretation, and it answers our four questions. First of all, was the butler's crime was worse? Surely no. It was the baker who did it. He was trying to get the butler into trouble. So therefore he got a more serious punishment. He was killed. Mashenke and the butler did something which was less offensive. He hid or smuggled a piece of stone or straw into the king's bread. So therefore, he got let off. What a coincidence it was the same time. No, because they hated each other and they were trying to get each other into trouble. It seems to be very strict, just fire them. No, because it was an affront to the king. They were playing out and trying to get each other into trouble. And in order to things which related to the king. And why is it called the chait? Because that's exactly what it was. The chait was, they were audacious to do this thing against the king. And it was a sin of sinas chino. And the lesson is, what's the connection? As we started off by saying that the Dalet Kos is what's pshat in Yerushalmi, that because of the four references to Kos in the story of the butler and baker, we have four Kos on Seder nights. So the answer is this, that the lesson is the butler and baker, they hated each other. But had they settled their differences, they could have lived in the palace of the king in harmony forever. And so to us, that's the message for Seder nights. We could have lived in the palace of the king, we could have lived in the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael in harmony forever, but sinas chinam caused the golus. And therefore, when we sit down on Seder night, we have to learn the message of the Dalet Kosos. We have to learn the message of the butler and the baker, that if we want to avoid sitting down on Tisha B'Av, which, by the way, always falls out on the same day of the week. The first day of Pesach and the first and Tisha B'Av is always the same day. Last year Tisha B'Av was on a Sunday. The first day of Pesach was on a Sunday. Erev Pesach was on a Shabbos. This year, Mitz Hashem, the first day of Pesach is on a Shabbos. And Tisha B'Av also, it falls on a Shabbos, is Nidcha to Sunday. The idea is this, that when we sit down and we have to learn the message of the four cups of wine, to rid ourselves of sinas chinam. And if we don't, then we'll again sit a few months later, the same day, on the floor on Tisha B'Av, because we haven't learned the lessons of the Dalet Kosos. We're still riddled with sinas chinam. Okay, fabulous insights of the Aruch HaShulchan. Let's move on to one final pshat. This is what I came across here, is again very, very interesting, fascinating insight, which is related to this week's parasha. Again, regarding the butler and the baker and those two dreams. The Gemara in Shabbos says, Omer Yitzchok, kosher rima lames kamachat b'bosa hachai, that the rima lames, the decomposition of the body, the worms attacking the goof of the person after he's buried, is kamachat b'bosa hachai, is like a needle attacking a living person. In other words, a person has a needle inserted in them, it's painful. Well, so too, kosher rima lames. Now, on that, there is a very interesting sefer chassidim. The bigger question is, do dead people know what's happening on earth? A question which all of us, I'm sure, have thought about. People who have passed on from this world, do they know what's going on here in this world? So let's take a look. This is a sugya in Brachas. The Gemara itself discusses this question. But let's take a look at this Sefer Chassidim which I came across. It's on the second box in paragraph 3. Hanashama roye mashoisin leguf, achamisa. The neshama sees exactly what happens to the guf after the neshama leaves this world. How do I know? He bases on a posuk in this week's Edra. Shenemar, it says in this week's parasha, v'ho'oif oichel esam min asal me'al loishi. When the baker had his dream, and he dreamt that there was a basket of bread on his head, and the birds were pecking at the bread, it says, koidim shemes le'ochel ha'oif esbesorei, ele'acha shemes. It says the Sefer Chassidim that the birds were pecking at him, at his flesh, but only after he died. He was totally passive in the dream. And the birds weren't scared of a human being. They wouldn't come to attack a human being who was alive, but he had died. And this person knew about this, what was happening to his body, after he died. And therefore, there's a proof, says the Sefer Chassidim, that the neshama sees exactly what happens to the guf after l'achamis, after he dies. And then he says, l'kach kosher rima l'meis, when it says that the rima l'meis, that the worms that attack the body, it's not a physical pain. The mace, the dead body doesn't experience physical pain in any way. Rather, what it means is that the neshama finds the deterioration of the body painful, but there's no physical pain then anymore. So says the Sefer Chassidim that you see from this week's parasha that the neshama sees what happens to the guf after the person dies. Why? Again, because in the dream, the baker saw what was happening to his own guf, which only happened l'achamisa. So he's seeing in a vision what happens l'achamisa, that he's aware of what's going on to his own guf. Fine. Now, that's the Sefer Chassidim. Now, based on this, there's a remarkable tshuva of the Rashba. It's a little bit gory, but it's fascinating in the extreme. Says the Rashba, one of the great Rishonim, the Rashba in Chelek Aleph and Simon Shin Samach Tes, in tshuvas. Shelas, this is the question. Reuven tziva b'shas pitirasei. Reuven gave instructions before he died. She yisu oisa likbar oisa amakum kvuras avosav. He wanted to be buried in the burial plot of his forebearers, of his parents. And on the day he passed away, for some reason they were not able to bury him in the place that he wanted to be buried. And they buried him in a sort of a short-term place because that's all they could do. Now, some weeks later, they want to reinter him and bury this mace in the burial spot of his parents. They're unable to do that in the meantime because the body is decomposing and they can't transfer the body right now. They want actually sachal abos until the body is fully decomposed and they just take the bones. In mutzalitin al kol gufo sid lemaha ha'ichel. Listen to this. The kids, the children of this mace ask, the Rashba, are they allowed to pour acid on the guf of their father so that the decomposition would speed up and therefore they could bury him in his desired place? Is this considered a bizoyin, a disgrace for the mace to pour acid on the guf to help the decomposition happen more quickly? Or maybe it will cause distress to the father. Like the Chazal say, the Gemara says in Shabbos, which I mentioned above, kosher rima lemeis kamachat the bosachai, that the pain of the rima of the worms to the body is like nails, like a needle to a living person. Can you reinter him or not? That was the question put to the Rashba. Look what the Rashba says. Tshuva. Kol kihai sha'osin achal basar mehera. Whatever you do to expedite the decomposition of the mace, they lisa osulamakum shetziva to take him to the place where he commanded. Muta. It's allowed. She'ein kan mishum bizoyin hameis. There's no disgrace to the body here. Ve'ein kan mishum tsar. There's no pain to the body. She'ein bos hameis margish bezemel kolshkin besid. The mace, the dead body, the corpse, doesn't experience any pain anymore. No physical pain. And to take him, to reinter him to his desired place, the kivrei avosav is muta, is allowed. When Chazal says, halach in Shulchan Aruch, and you're there, you can't reinter a person, even to a more, to sort of an inferior Beis HaKvaros, to a more superior one, that's for no reason. But in this situation, to reinter him so that you could place him in his parents' burial ground, that's allowed. Because it's pleasant for a person to be buried in that place. the kol shekein benidin shlefanenu, and how much more so in our situation, shetziva lefonai, sorry, lifnei Moshe, he commanded before his death, v'shenikba das lefnoso, and he was buried with that in mind. Therefore, mutza u'mitzvah abonav l'kayim devar, and it's a mitzvah for the children to do that. So amazing, an amazing tshuva of the Rashba, that it would be mutza to expedite the decomposition in order to be mekayim divrei hames and to bury him, based on a posuk in this week's parasha. Unbelievable. Now, moreover, the Shulchan Aruch paskens according to this this halacha, this Rashba. Says the Shulchan Aruch in Yerden, in the Hilchas Aveda, Simon Shin Samach Gimel Sif Beis, Ein Malichim Meis Me'ir Sheyesh Bakvaris Liracheres. You're not allowed to reinter the mace from one city to another. Elim came Mechutz Laris Laris. To go to Eretz Yisrael is different. Says the Ramah, Oishim Malichim Esu Lemakim Kuvus Avosov, or to his Makim Kuvus Avosov, to the Baron's burial grounds, because again, that is considered pleasant for the neshama. Ve'im tziva lahulichem makom lemakom, if he commanded his children to take him from one place to another, or he should tziva lekavro base of lebeis akbar. So they gave certain instructions to bury him in a certain place. Shomin lei, and here we go. Umuta litain sid alav, you're allowed to put acid on the mace, kedei la'achal habos maher, to expedite the decomposition for lichon makom asher tziva, and to take him to that place. And again, he quotes the Rashba, the Rashba we just mentioned. So very, very interesting tshuva of the Rashba, which relates to this week's parasha. The Sefer Chassidim says that the guf doesn't know any pain. The neshama knows what's going on to the guf, but it doesn't experience any physical pain. And when the Gemara says in Shabbos, kosher rima lemes, machat bosachai, that's talking about the neshama seeing the sort of the decomposition of the guf. That's a sort of an emotional or psychological, spiritual type of pain, but it's not a physical pain at all. And therefore, based on that, the Rashba, I suppose, based on this or on other things, the Rashba says it would be mutter to put some acid on the guf to let it decompose quickly to expedite the wishes of the dead person to be buried by Makom Kivrei Avosov. An astonishing Sefer Chassidim and Tshuva of the Rashba, which, like I say, is brought in Shulchan Aruch. So let us just quickly summarize the three ideas that we've shared this evening. The first idea is the famous Rashi, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. So says Rabbi Yeshua Mikutna that ties into the Gemara in Brachos Samach Daled Amud Aleph, that to a chai, to a living person, you say Leich L'Shalom, to a mace, you say Leich B'Shalom. Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva, that he wanted to live, he thought he had all his nisyonos, he wanted to live with the shleimus that is achieved. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not quite there yet. It's Leich L'Shalom. There's still more for you to do. There are still more missions for you to accomplish. And only after a person dies do we say Leich B'Shalom. Then we did the amazing pshat of the Aruch HaShulchan on the four cups of wine. On Seder night, says the Yerushalmi, one is connected the Dalet L'Shemus of Geula. But the other reason is because it says the word Kais four times in the story of the butler and the baker. What on earth is the connection? And second of all, the four questions of the Aruch HaShulchan, seemingly the butler's crime was worse, that it's a coincidence that happens at the same time. It seems like a very strict punishment to imprison and kill them. Why not just fire them, remove them from their job? And why is it called a chait? So the answer is that they hated each other. The whole theory of the Aruch HaShulchan, they hated each other. Each one was trying to get each other into trouble. And therefore the baker's crime was actually much more severe because it was more offensive and direct against the king. And that's why his punishment was more strict, etc. And that's the message for Seder night, that we could have lived there as well in harmony forever, but Sinas Chilam causes that trouble. And therefore, we have to learn the lessons as we drink the Dalet Chesus to make sure that a few months later, Tisha B'Av, we're not sitting again on the ground. As I said, Tisha B'Av always falls on the same day of the week as the first day of Pesach. And lastly, this is a very interesting Sefer Chassidim. Do the dead know what's happening on earth? Based on the Pasuk, the dream of the baker, that he saw the birds were coming, pecking at his flesh, that was only that they see that the neshama is aware of what's happening to the guf, and it's not a physical pain. And therefore, when the Gemara says, kosherim lemeis, kamachat v'bosa achai, that the pain of the body, it's not a physical pain, it's more sort of a spiritual, psychological, emotional type of pain, but not a physical pain. And based on that, the Rashba has this fascinating tshuva, where he allows the children to expedite the decomposition in order to be mekayim divrei avoid to do the wishes of the father, to be mekayim the divrei hames, and to bury him in the kivrei avesov. And that is paskin in Shulchan Aruch, like I said, by the Ramah there in Yerodeh and Hilchas Avelus. So fascinating insights. Thank you for joining. I wish you all a very good week.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.